Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 25th. I'm John Gibson, and with me this lovely Sunday evening is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Hey, bud. What's happening? That's kind of a bad question. Too many things are happening, but I'm good.
Good. I'm good as well. And yes, too many things are happening, and they all happen at once, like a bad bullpen breakdown.
Oh, that sounds like a foreshadowing.
That sounds like a bunch of teams in MPV this weekend, I think.
Yeah, well, it was a week like that. So there was kind of, you know, sometimes when you're writing a baseball story, as we do, you know, it starts out like a chess match, you know, and you're going to write about this point and that point. You're going to write about every crucial point. And then sometimes it becomes a basketball game. And you just got to say, okay, this is gone, or I'll never finish the story.
Right. And that's the way it was the whole weekend. So we had some great baseball action. But on this week's show, we're going to focus on the Rakuten Eagles. And we have an interview with Zealous Wheeler of Rakuten. And we're going to talk about the Eagles, the ace bandages, Rami Khan on the hot seat, and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so I had the Eagles had a rare home game at Tokyo Dome on Tuesday, and I happened to be off that day because I had an afternoon appointment. But since it was in the afternoon, it gave me enough time to go and check in with Zealous Wheeler at Tokyo Dome in their game before they played Oryx. And Wheeler, who was a linebacker, he said he played linebacker in high school football.
Mm-hmm. I believe that.
And on offense, he played a little bit of fullback, but he said they didn't give him the ball that much. He said he wanted to run because he was tired of hitting people all game. But he's off to a good start this season. Yeah, he's batting .290. He's got two home runs. One got erased in that rain game the other night, but he's got... Mm-hmm. He's got 18 RBIs, and his 9 doubles lead the Pacific League, and he's only struck out 15 times. He's really making better contact consistently. You know, he's really doing a good job. And one of the things I wanted to talk to him about was his manager last year, Dave Hiromoto Okubo, who obviously was a rookie last season and only lasted the one year. And he's now on Pro Yaku News, and occasionally, not all the time, he's not so much a regular, but he shows up once in a while. And on the show, he said that Wheeler really showed this desire last year after the All-Star break, mm-hmm, to get that second contract, and started doing the things that a player would do, to putting in extra work and running harder and practice. And I mean, this is what he said.
Yeah, I'm listening to that, and I'm thinking that sounds like what a sports writer would say. Oh, he's getting good results, therefore he's putting in...
Well, I don't know that he had better results in the second half, but I think he did. But I think what Dave was really pointing to was the effort level was higher and the desire to come back was apparent. Mm. He wanted to come back, and he started playing like it. He's been playing like that ever since, I think.
Okay, I guess it was probably the point at which he figured out that there was food he could eat in Japan, because that took a while.
I know the feeling, dude.
I'll bet you do.
All right, so he's not a big talker, but I had lots of questions prepared, including some he didn't really want to get into, but I think he says a lot with a little bit, so let's take a listen to what he had to say. Our guest this week is Zealous Wheeler, making his second appearance on Japan Baseball Weekly. Thank you for taking the time, man.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right. You played last season under a rookie manager, and this year you've got a very seasoned guy. What's the difference between playing under this manager and last year?
You know, managers do their job. You know, they just put the guys, write the lineup, and they put the guys out there. But, you know, the difference in me is... I think the guys come in with a better attitude this year. And, you know, this year we started off good, healthy guys. But to me, it's the same.
I mean, this guy, like I said, he's a seasoned guy. He has won a Japan Series. And last year he had a rookie manager. He had never really led the team like that.
Right,
so
right.
There's got to be something else that's different.
Yeah, but, you know, that's something I can't comment on. You know, but we just go out there and just try to win games every day and, you know, just try to put us in the best position he can.
All right. Well, how's the communication with him? Is that aspect a little bit different?
It is. You know, but it's I would say it's good. for everybody.
All right. Now, compared to last year when you came in and you didn't really know what to expect in your first season, now you have a season under your belt. Yeah. Everybody talks about the second half that you had last year and how the effort level was really high for you. What did you do differently to prepare for this next season?
Nothing. I just go by it day by day. You know, I just try to prepare mentally. You know, everybody got the physical ability, but I'm just trying to, mental-wise, I try to be a lot stronger. You know, like you said, first year was tough. Second year, I know what's going on, so the mental part is there.
How do you prepare mentally then?
Just small things here, you know, the culture-wise, the mm-hmm. game of baseball in Japan. And, you know, I just try to take my time and just go out there and perform the best way I can.
All right. Now, you're putting up some pretty good numbers, hitting the ball with authority. What did you work on in terms of the offensive approach? And again, mentally, you're talking about knowing what kind of pitches are coming? Or,
right. This year, just trying to get back to the opposite side of the field. Last year, I think I was pool happy. Mm. I don't know the reason why, but, you know, my natural swing is gap to gap.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, I'm off to a good start, and hopefully I can keep it going.
What about your knowledge of the strike zone?
You know, I have a pretty decent knowledge, you know, but I have to fight the umpires here. But it's kind of tough, but you know, that's something I have to deal with and make adjustment on the fly.
Do you see a difference? You notice a difference of you having a better understanding between last year and this year?
Yeah, you know, I do.
And that's helping you?
A lot. You just try to get used to the travel of Japan and. Also, you know, it's the consistent goal of the practice and the games, you know, in Japan is a lot different from the States. So that far, I'm better this year.
Okay. Now, you guys struggled to score runs and hit for power last season, and this year you guys seem to be more toward the middle of the pack. You know, Gomes hasn't found his footing yet, but your scoring seems to be up. Why is that as a team?
Well, I don't know. That maybe because everybody want to have a good season last year. You know, everybody it was tough last year for everyone. But this year, you know, I feel like good things are going to happen. We just got to continue going.
One of the things I noticed so far is that your team has the second fewest strikeouts on the offensive side in the Pacific League.
Right.
What kind of approach are you guys taking in terms of strikeouts?
Well, I don't think the approach is different. You know, we just want to put pressure on the defense. You know, the more contact we make, the more defense they have to play. So, you know, we just try to keep doing that as the season progresses, see how it goes out.
Now, you guys also seem to be among the leaders in RBI. So while you don't have as many hits, I think like the total number of hits, you guys don't have as many hits as, let's say, Lotte or some team like that right now.
Right.
You're getting the timely hitting.
Right.
What's been the key to that?
Right. You know, I don't know the key to that, but I just hope it continues.
You got to know something, man.
I don't, man. You know, me, I just come out here and play the game. Just come play the game the best way I can, everything. But the timely hitting is great, and I hope it keeps going all year because that's big in baseball.
Yeah, we know that. Now, Louis Okoye, what do you see in him when you look at him?
To me, he reminds me of an American player. You know, he got the size. He had all the tools, I think. You know, he's a good kid, you know, young kid, but he's ready, so-so, but I guess they sent him down, but I don't know why, you know, but that's decision, but he just needs to continue working and he'll be fine.
What kind of player do you see him being? I kind of likened him to a guy like Matsui.
Yeah, that's a good question, but, you know, he has to, you know, the leverage to be a power hitter, also to be an extra base hitter, also steal bases, you know. But to me, just continue working with time, he'll get better.
What would you say he has to work on the most?
Throwing the ball, actually, because his defense is a plus outfielder.
Mm.
You know, just need to play games. He just need to play and build that confidence in a professional player that he needs to be.
All right. When you say throwing the ball, you mean accuracy where to throw and when to throw,
no,
all that stuff?
Accuracy, you know.
Now, what about on the mound? You guys kind of surprised me because last year you kind of had a lot of starters and a lot of guys struggled, but this year seems to be a little bit more steady. How have you seen the guys on the mound, the starters?
Yeah, the starters are doing well. You know, they're going deep in the games, keeping us close in the games. But, you know, we had to fight quite a bit of games, well, a few games where we could have pulled them out, but we just did it. You know, that's baseball. But hopefully the pitcher continue to pitch well and we score plenty of runs for them.
All right, now, the Mr. Potato Head thing, when did that start, and when did it start here in Japan?
I mean, as soon as I arrived in Japan, they called me that. But it's been going on in the States for, I know, 6-7 years, as long as I've been professional.
And then what's that like for you? Is it something you embrace, something you...
Yeah, you know, I embrace it. If somebody give you your name, you know, you embrace it. But that's something I did not come up with. I heard all kind of names, Norbert, Potato Head, Big Mama, you know, Big Mama House, Martin Lawrence.
Yeah,
I heard all kind of names, but but I embrace it and just have fun with it.
All right, now, speaking of having fun, you guys are having fun winning. You guys had the good start, slowing down a little bit here. What are the keys as you guys move forward?
You know, just go out there, continue to being aggressive. You know, just keep coming together.
Not too aggressive, because you guys ran yourselves out of the league last year.
Yeah. Well, that was really, really aggressive. But you know, just keep playing our style of baseball, contact and play good defense, and score runs where we can when we need it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll be watching.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. All right. Potato Head. That's the first I heard of that.
You didn't? You haven't heard that? Yeah, they've been calling him Mr. Potato Head. I think. Like you said, it started in the States, but it caught on over here as well. But I like the ending there. He did his Elvis impression at the end. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, he's a very polite gentleman, and it is always a joy to talk to him because he's nice and upbeat. If you know, I guess the good thing is if you're kind of feeling down and a little gloomy and on the spot, and you see Zealous Wheeler, he'll say, "There you are. Good. Everything's good. You feel better about everything."
That's true. Yeah, that's true. So he oversimplified the manager role, I think, by saying, well, they fill out the lineup card and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I asked him the direct questions on the difference between Okubo and Nashida, the manager this year. And while we respect his privacy, that kind of opens up the door for wild speculation on our part. So what stuck with you the most once you heard the chat?
Wild speculation? I believe my speculation is probably closer to the strike zone. I'm looking.
Every pitcher thinks his speculation is in the strike zone, buddy.
I try not to leave too much of it in the strike zone because I know somebody is looking a bit out of the park.
That's right. Smack.
Okay. Well, I would put mine in the sense that, I heard that and I'm thinking, okay, he doesn't want to be personal. You know, he wants to avoid personal stuff and he wants to avoid negative stuff. Now, he mentioned the communication with Nashida as being better. You know, he wasn't going to say anything about Okubo, and he's just such a positive guy and he didn't want to get personal. But I get that. I've had that feeling. Nashida is a very upbeat guy, and I'll skip ahead to the story I was going to tell later, which is I'm standing in the dugout and this morning at Cebu Prince Dome.
And that's Sunday morning. Yeah.
That's Sunday morning, and you know, I go over and shake hands, and he's looking like he's got this big smile on his face, and he's like, he didn't actually come and say you want to stand here and bore me with questions, but he might as well have.
And I'm sure you had some dumb, crazy number based questions to bore him with, right?
Not really, but you know, he's used to my, you know, he's been listening to my dumb questions for the last 14 years. I think he's pretty used to them. So you know, but that's the kind of guy he is. He's very approachable. He's extremely approachable and friendly. And you can tell if he sort of doesn't agree with you, he'll look, you know, he'll roll his eyes and go, you know, that's okay. I'll think about that one. I'm like, yeah, but he's never rude or, you know, he's always trying to put what you say in a good light. And he's fun to talk to in that respect. And every now and then he'll throw you something you weren't expecting. But I like the bit about the communication. Nashida's really good at that. I think the other thing is, and I understand where he's coming from with the, you know, I'm just here doing my job. It's not my job to figure out the team's direction and policy. Why are you all having better contact? I was, you know, sometimes you get the insight because the guys are really tuned into that. Mm-hmm. And my guess is he's got enough on his plate dealing with, you know, Zealous Wheeler being consistent.
Okay.
And that he wasn't too, you know, everything's working. So, you know, why worry about it perhaps? But it was interesting that he didn't comment. Well, he didn't comment on very much of anything. But yeah, I think you're going over the changes and the comfort level. he told me in the spring that the biggest difference between the first half of his season last year and the second half was his comfort level. And he said also, I was not playing good baseball in the first half, but then he, you know, he later on said that he was completely out of water in the first, you know, he was a fish out of water in the first half of the season, and it took him a long time to adjust to lots of little things. And I think, and obviously he seemed so much more comfortable being here. And I watched him play I've seen a bunch of the Eagles games the last couple of weeks, and it seems like he looks comfortable in the batter's box. It looks like he has he knows what to expect from the pitchers more.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that he's fighting with the umps.
Yeah.
I don't love that he's fighting with the umps, but we understand he's not okay, Kitaka, put up your dukes.
Yeah, well, that's a very long line, and it includes a long list of Japanese guys too, so just wait your turn.
Yeah, so but you have to do that. You have to let the umpires have their strike zone, because you can't do nothing about it.
Right. Yeah.
No, I skipped to an aside here. When Hitoshi Tamura moved from the Central League to the Pacific League, he told me, look, the first year was a wash because I could never get used to the strike zone in the Pacific League. This is when the umpires were different.
And this is the outfielder who played for the Bay Stars and then went to the SoftBank Hawks.
The sixth tool, yeah.
Stop the sixth, it with the sixth tool.
You remember that? Do you remember the sixth? Okay, anyway. I don't know, go on.
Fashion, yes, I remember.
Exactly. Fashion is the sixth tool. And so hopefully that movie will start. Old star Bruce Willis.
Get on with your aside from your other aside.
So he said, it took me a year to basically get over the fact that the strike zone was different. And I mentioned it to his manager, Sadahara Oh, and he just rolled his eyes and said, like, that lunkhead. Like, you can't do nothing about the umpire's strike zone. You got the pitcher's got a strike zone, and he's got a we're focused on that. The batter's got his strike zone. He's got to focus on the umpire's going to have a strike zone, and he's going to focus on that. And you can't be worrying about what other people are doing.
Right, right.
So obviously he seems more comfortable with his strike zone in an environment where people don't agree with him.
Gotcha. Getting back to that first comment, I really don't know why he wouldn't say something about, oh, well, this manager does this A, B, C, and D. And I'm not sure that it had to be negative or positive. I just wanted to know what the differences were. But he wouldn't touch that question. And
I understand that.
I understand
it. Because you can say things that are innocuous to reporters.
He's laughing.
Yeah, and have it come out sounding like you just said, well, we should burn their cities and loot their stores.
Right. Yeah. But last year I went out. It was at Cebu Dome last year that I went out and tried to get an interview. And I actually didn't know who I was going to talk to with the Eagles last year, so I prepared a bunch of questions for some of the foreign guys. Obviously, it wasn't Zealous Wheeler, but one of the guys told me that he really wasn't happy, and he made no qualms about it and said it in uncertain terms. This manager's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, that guy was pretty astute, because I think there have been a lot of people in the medical field that came to reach the same conclusion about Hiromoto Okubo after several years of diagnosis.
Oh, stop it.
Hashtag hi.
Now you're just piling on. I just think there was an issue going on there with the foreign players. I don't think they agreed with a lot of the philosophies, the baseball philosophies, and I just think there was a problem there, and I think that's probably why Zealous didn't want to get into it at all. And I
think so.
He was not the one who told me this. So
right.
I think it was just something going on with the foreign players. So.
Yeah, but again, that's the thing, is if you assume, you can ask the question, is there a difference? This guy is, a proven manager, and the other guy wasn't. And sort of like anything you say could be slanted one way or the other, and not even very innocuously. And I think he knows enough. Praising somebody is often, especially in baseball, if you you praise somebody, it's the flip side of criticizing them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're drawing a line, you're emphasizing something. And if it's another player about 12 years ago, he was a really good offensive player. I'm not going to mention his name, but he's very sensitive. And I said, this guy, I wrote in the paper, this guy does everything except hit for average. He plays good defense. He hits for power. He's a selective hitter. He's a smart hitter. And he thought I was ripping him because I said he didn't hit for average.
Yeah, it's just like the typo on the page. You know, mm-hmm. no matter how good the prose is,
mm-hmm.
that's all you see.
Yeah.
Once you spot it, that's the only thing you see.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah, I understand that. I mean, it doesn't matter. He thought you were ripping him because, you know, in his mind, you were. So, but anyway, I'm looking at these. I'm looking at Zelis, and I'm looking at the fact that he says he didn't do anything in the offseason to prepare for this second season. I really found that hard to believe. But, you know, again, maybe he didn't want to expose much, and he didn't, you know, if he said, you know, I'm standing a little straight up because I want to be able to do this with my hands, or I want to be able to reach these pitches here. I don't know. I don't think it's that big a deal if he tells the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. Like you said, we've got a million listeners who all tune in to get the latest information on all the import players. But
yep, absolutely.
And it's probably nothing that they haven't seen already, but he didn't want to get into it. So, the mental part of the game is really important. And as Alex Ramirez has told us in the past, the higher percentage of the hitting is mental than it is physical.
Yeah, well,
for these guys, it is.
I was going to say, my mental part is I know I can't hit, so that kind of puts a damper on it.
Yeah, no matter what kind of physical training you do. But and then lastly, for me, I think it was very telling that he said Louis Okoye needs to work on his throwing, and that's the only thing that he pointed out. And I'm like, what? The accuracy of his throwing?
Well, you know, that actually was really interesting.
Right, which is why I say he said a lot without saying very much in this interview.
And to me, you know what that said is, Zelis Wheeler is an American, and and that actually sounded very significant to me, because if it was in Japan, what they'd say was, he's got to be you know, they'll pick whatever it is he doesn't do well.
Uh huh.
And the one week, you know, I don't know what it is offhand. Maybe
hitting those high fastballs.
Yeah,
ones that everybody had trouble with.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Hitting fastballs high and inside, and this is, you got to work on that, son. You know, because that's what they do in Japan. They basically attack everybody for flaws that are virtually irrelevant, and as opposed to focusing on the things you could really do and be extremely outstanding at. And what Mr. Wheeler was saying was, look, this guy has the ability to be a plus outfielder, but he's, in order to do that, he's going to have to do this. And I thought, that's really, to me, that was really telling. And he's saying, I want this guy to be, you know, this is an area where he can be truly outstanding in the base, in worldwide baseball. And I thought that was really interesting. And to me, the message was, the rest will come. But that's one thing I hope that he works on, because, A, he is a good defender, but he can be a much better one.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, that's the only thing you could find to – I mean, you know, usually because when you get – especially teenagers, but young guys, mm-hmm. you hear, okay, well, you know, his approach at the plate is this, and he needs to calm down, and – you know, the basic things that you hear is not what he said. He says he needs to throwing accuracy is what he needs to work on. Just, you know, and I've never heard, I literally have never heard one guy say about another teammate that he's a plus defender.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard him say that he's really good. And these guys play, essentially, they play the same position. And if you think about it, Zelis Wheeler beat him out for a starting job, and actually was one of the reasons why he got pushed to the minors, is because Zelis is doing so well. If you think about it, I mean, in part.
Yeah, well, there's a few people.
He's one of the guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's one of the guys. Yeah. And so they're effectively at the same position, and he's calling him a plus defender, which Zelis is not. And I think he'd admit that. Mm-hmm. But with Imaya injured and him back at third, I think he's doing a good job at third base, and I'd really like to see him stay, to be honest.
Isn't he an infielder to begin with?
Yeah, I thought they brought him over as an infielder, and they threw him out there in the outfield when they wanted to get other guys and change the lineup last year. And this is Okubo trying to get his bat into the lineup. But
he's game, you know. He's positive and he's game and he's going to apply himself, I think. And then here, again, is the comfort level. I think when you're comfortable, you know, that's an easier thing to do, is to look at what you can do as opposed to what you can't do.
All right, so let's make a two-team transition and get into the Eagles and talk about their problems. They recently had a six-game skid. They broke that on Wednesday with a 12-inning walk-off win over Oryx. They battled back on Friday to beat Cebu, and then they tied on Saturday, and then they came from ahead on Sunday today with Ernesto Mejia's spectacular 3-home run, career-high 7-RBI day. Capped by the grand slam, the go-ahead grand slam. It's a perfect situation. You're down by 3 runs. You've got your hot hitter at the plate who's already got a – you don't think he's going to hit another home run. I thought he was going to put one in the gap somewhere.
Well, that's what he was trying to do.
And, well, he just hit it over the gap.
Yeah, he did indeed hit it over the gap. And it's the only one that wasn't really more or less the straightaway center.
Yeah, gets a grand slam, gets the team in front, and they go ahead and win. So – you know, the Eagles are the team that couldn't score last year, and right now they're second in the Pacific League in scoring, or this is, I think, through Saturday. I didn't add up all the numbers from today. And they only had 8 home runs. I don't know that they hit one. They didn't hit one today, did they?
No.
So that's one more home run than the punchless Oryx Buffaloes, but I think Oryx hit one, so they're probably tied at this point. So, you know, the team ERA is over 4, and somehow they're around 500. I don't really know how they're doing it. That bullpen is a hot, stinking mess.
Okay.
Something we'd really like to flush down the toilet, but we can't. It's too big.
Wow.
There aren't pipes big enough to fit that bullpen.
Wow. I mean, I think you're missing some pejoratives. I think you got some more on the shelf, but you're being subtle, John.
Yeah, I'm holding back.
Well, okay, I'll tell I guess I'll share the two things. One was my observations from watching the Oryx Rockton really, really well. First of all, watching Oryx and Rockton on Tuesday at Tokyo Dome, I was not anticipating a really well-played game. So it was really a pleasure to see a really well-played game. Two, like, good pitches, good swings, good defensive play, you know, like smart defensive plays.
Right.
Really entertaining, really lovely game. And that kind of struck me as saying these teams are going to be okay. And I still think that to some degree about Oryx, which we'll skip at this moment. But anyway, so that was my impression was two things. When Motohiro Shima is catching, the Eagles are a different team from when he's not.
The Eagles or the pitchers?
The Eagles.
Okay.
The Eagles.
Just making sure.
Right. The Eagles are a different team. And the reason they're a different team is because I've seen Shima just do some really, really creative things behind the plate, and that he'll come out for a pinch hitter. And then as much like it did today at Cebu Dome, the game just unravels on him. I've seen that a couple of times in this past week. They take him out for a pinch hitter, and Ishimine comes in, and Ishimine sort of like hasn't been looking at the hitters. I don't know what he's been doing. I think they lock him up, and they don't let him look at the game before he comes in.
You know, he's just been practicing his swings. He's not worried about catching the ball.
I don't know what it is. But
no, I don't know either.
But that hasn't worked out well, and I think they're going to pick up. I think the other team's already picking up on it. Let's just, you know, try to get Shima out of the game. You know, you're talking trying to get the starting pitcher out. They're trying to get the starting catcher out of the game. Okay, so there's that. And I noticed that Shima tends to be very aggressive attacking the zone with pitchers. And I like that. And so that was the other thing. And I thought the second observation I made was that the Eagles batters are having better at bats than they did last year. I thought taking better swings at fat pitches, you know, laying off a few more bad pitches, working the count a little better. That was my impression. And so anyway, so I had a chance when Mr. Nashta was standing there looking vulnerable, and I decided to pounce on him. And I asked him, well, first, what was your plan coming into the season, what was your first thing you wanted to do in camp? And he said, I wanted to give the pitchers basically build their inning management skills. And by that he meant I need them to be aggressive in the zone. I need them to be aggressive and hitting the zone and not walking people. They're going to have to learn how to pitch without walking people as much as they can and get out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Because – and now to do that, they not only have to have a plan and they have to learn how to execute the plan and learn what to do when they can't execute the plan. They have to pitch. So whether they're good or not, they got to be out there pitching. And you know about me and plans, it's always better to have a plan than not to have a plan. And to me, that's a huge difference between Okubo and Nishida. Okubo's plan is, I think, whatever one gets the impression that his strategy or his philosophy is built upon, you know, what he read that morning, or I don't know what his astrologer told him or something. It's just like it's just weird. Favoritism is a big word that comes to mind. Oh, I like this player, so he'll like when he was with Cebu, he'd like a player on the minor league team. He'd like what a player stood for. He liked the player's image, and then he'd ignore everything else that he'd ignore the other players who were competing with the guy he liked.
Right.
Okay, and I didn't notice that with the Eagles last year, but I knew a lot of people on the Eagles were underperforming last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, this is a team that had trouble scoring. It was punchless and blah, blah, blah. It didn't, you know, Okubo was trying to run his way to runs, and it's basically the same guys, a lot of the same guys. Of course, the performances and the expectations are different, and you've got Zealous Wheeler batting in the cleanup, and he's making consistent contact and everything, but I think... And they're getting good quality starts. They're at 69% right now, and that leads the Pacific League. So to get the quality starts, they're 10-5-1 in those quality starts. So that's the reason that they're even close to 500 now. But if they weren't blowing so many games, they'd be at the top of the Pacific League right now. And I'm looking at the bullpen, and I'm seeing this. I'm seeing they have no power arms, and that's not anything new. We don't see a lot of power arms in Japan, but the guys they do have, they're not control guys either. So they're not throwing with power. They're not throwing with control. And then they're not executing the pitches.
That's to say
is an understatement, because they're just hoping that the batters hit the ball at the fielders. But they're going to need 19 fielders to make that plan work.
And that's 19 Cecil fielders.
Yeah, and they're going to need some of them to sit in the stands and catch the ball and throw the ball back, because
#Because
that's not working. So
buy a ticket.
No. Get your uniform. Get your butt out there in left field in the power alley, and throw every ball that comes at you. Throw it to third.
Yeah.
You know, I really liked the start that Tomohiro Anmaku gave for them today. Yep. And it really just, it was Saturday. And he looked good for three innings. And then it looked like he got tired and his velocity kind of went down and his legs started to get fatigued. And by the time they had to take him out, it just seemed like he was done. And I'm thinking, you know, this says to me what I said a couple weeks ago or last week. Can we put him in the bullpen? I still think he would be a really good setup guy. Right now, he's the power arm they need, and he looked good when he was fresh. And he could actually get them 4-5 outs and hand things off to Yuki Matsui. I hope they consider that. I think right now I can't see a solution unless they're going to go for a foreign guy. They have to bring in and try to get him acclimated and ready to go and to contribute right away. You know, I think Anmaku is a good solution for the moment. And when I broached that topic before, you said it might not be the right thing for Anmaku, but it might be what the team needs. And I think it needs it even more right now.
Could be. I mean, Nishida is a very flexible guy, or he has been a very flexible guy in the past. I mean, he's had what I think are just some horribly stupid decisions, but he hasn't been married to them. And he's shown an ability to innovate. And I think the other thing he said today was spoke to making better contact. He says after the pitchers, you know, having a better plan He said he wants the batters to have a better plan, but don't be swinging at bad pitches. You know, hey, that's it. Don't be swinging as bad pitches. Get used to not swinging. You know, don't hack. You're not helping.
Right. Well, again, their record could be much better. We look at the way the Hawks took off and had their they extended their winning streak here, or they lost.
No, they lost on Saturday.
They lost on Saturday, but they restarted their winning streak with a nice comeback on Sunday. So, you know, they're starting to play like we thought they would. But I sincerely think that if the Eagles had their bullpen in line, if they could have saved maybe three or four of the games that they had lost, and you look at the numbers in the Pacific League, everything's tight. They could be in first place right now.
They could be. Not,
which is not a big deal because it's still early, but
yeah. Well,
you know, 6 or 7 games over 500 and looking nice.
I think they are a competitive team. Last year they were unfortunately they were a joke, and this year they're not a joke.
Well, so, not so far, but if this bullpen keeps up, they're going to be a joke in a hurry.
Other than the waste management issues that John brought up, I like the idea that he sees it as a process and that, you know, where they are right now is not where they expect to be, which is, of course, what I expected since Nashida has never done well in his first season as manager. This is probably his best record for improvement.
Yep.
In the first year before he's taken his teams to the Japan Series in the second year.
Well, again, every great coach or manager needs to have players. I don't know that he has the players, but he's getting good production from the guys in the field. He's just got to figure out something on the mound, and I think they can actually, you know, you said joke, and I joked that they were going to be fourth place. I think I had them finishing so.
Item last, I believe. So
yeah, well, you know, and like I said, things are with the starting pitching they've shown already. They can sustain a little bit, and they've just got to be able to close out games. And you know, I like bullpens, and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, today I watched Kamata, who's a guy who has shown good stuff on a very irregular basis, but today he was really good. Except he missed badly with about 5 or 6 pitches, and 2 of them were to Ernesto Mejia.
Mm.
And he crushed both of them. And yeah. that was the only thing. And then he got a new catcher, and he and the new catcher were saying, well, let's just throw this somewhere in the zone and get out of here. And they did.
Yeah, one of them did.
One of them left the mound like 3 batters later. Okay.
All right. All right, making a seamless transition now, I want to talk about the few aces needing some bandages here. We've got Chihiro Kaneko, the Oryx ace. Mm-hmm. We've got Yusei Kikuchi, and I'm saying ace because these were the opening day starters for these teams.
Oh,
so they're the presumed ace. How's
well,
that?
Well, they're the, I guess the, I suppose the nominal is the de facto ace, which de facto is a huge difference in Japan.
Right. Well, a de facto ace would have been Shoichi Ino of the Bay Stars because Shun Yamaguchi was going to get the opening day nod, but
correct.
He was injured. So he's correct. De facto. But anyway.
So yes. Yeah.
Go yeah. And then Shohei Ohtani. Those are maybe the big three of mm-hmm. guys who on the list who we had better or more expectations for, at least some people. I didn't have any big expectation for Kikuchi. I've never really been on the bandwagon on that guy. But
you will be.
Yeah.
Give it a couple of months and you will be again. Although, to be honest, I haven't seen anything from him that impressed me this year. But
yeah. Yeah. Well, he's undergoing form changes. He changed some stuff in the off season, and he's been working on that. I think it's still going to take him some time to actually implement it in games and get it to work for him. But we'll see. I still don't think he's going to be much better than he has been. Although he had a stretch. Part of last year he was really good, but
mm-hmm.
I knew it wouldn't last, and it didn't. But anyway,
we've
got these guys who haven't, you know, especially Shohei Ohtani, who probably has pitched well enough to win maybe 5 games. I'm sorry, yeah. He's only pitched 5 games. Maybe 4 of those 5 games he probably could have won. And the same with Kaneko. He has been in his games, but he had to come out of opening day after giving up some runs, and Oryx never got the lead.
Mm.
He had to come out, I think it was a week ago. They sent him out to keep pitching and lose the game, which he did.
Well, I think what Ohtani's missing is a better designated hitter when he pitches.
Now you're pushing for him to bat, right?
Well, of course, having said that, I did the numbers and I checked to see how he hit in the, I don't know, 6 or 7 games that he's batted as a pitcher. And it's better than most pitchers. He's probably the best hitting pitcher in Japan as a pitcher, but he looks like a good hitting pitcher.
He looks like a good hitting pitcher.
Exactly. His numbers, you know, I guess your typical pitcher has got a OPS of around 500, 490 something, and Ohtani's probably 580.
Well, whatever he needs,
As opposed to, you know, 750 as a normal, as a designated hitter, so.
Right. Well, I just find it kind of strange. I mean, Kaneko was going into his start, I think it was Saturday, he was 0-2 with a 7.11 ERA. He gave up one run yesterday. I think it was over 7 or 8 innings. And his ERA is down to 5.85, so it's great for him. But then you look at Ohtani, who's 0-2, or he didn't take the loss today. His ERA was 1.86 going into that game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's got, you know, it's up to 2.27 now. Kikuchi, 1-3 with a 2.67 ERA. And then you've got other guys who just haven't won a lot. What do you think is the problem and what's going on here? Or do you see any patterns? Or is there anything to worry about? Or are these guys no longer aces in some cases, like Kikuchi?
Ohtani,
we think we know is the ace, but Kaneko, maybe he's starting to slow down. He's starting to regress.
One is Kikuchi ain't the ace. Nobody thinks of him as the ace. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show. I may have, with the head coach Tetsuya Shiozaki telling me they basically wanted to keep Takayuki Kishi the actual ace to pitch against the Hawks, and so they used Yusei Kikuchi to open the season against Oryx, and they did that to light a fire under his butt, basically to motivate him. You know, because we think he's got excellent stuff. We think his issues are elsewhere, essentially mental toughness. And so we want to get him motivated on concentrate, basically keep maintaining his concentration throughout the game. So that's that. Tadashi Setsu. He's the nominal ace. He's the guy, you know, he's Masanori Ishikawa. You know, he's a pretty good pitcher, and he's the ace because he's been the ace. And then basically until he moves to the major leagues and comes back, he's going to be the ace.
What?
You know, well, I mean, Wada was the ace, and then he left, and now he's not. You know,
you don't mean move to the major leagues. You mean move to the States.
Move to Mexico.
You're not going in any major leagues.
Okay, maybe you could move to, you know, what would be considered a major league in Italy. Until he leaves, he's going to be the ace pretty much. I mean, we've seen that happen in Japan. You're an ace. You're pretty much an ace until you say you're not. Or you retire, or you leave. So Setsu hasn't pitched like an ace the last, except when they bring him. You know what they do is he pitches the last 3 years. He's pitched lousy from March until May. Then they sent him to the farm team for a prolonged period of time. They took him out of deep freeze. They thawed him out in September.
Cryogenics.
Exactly. He's really good, and he's pitched a good game in the postseason every year for him, and usually a couple of good starts at the end of the season. So I think that's what their plan for him every year now. They're going to start him on opening day, and if he doesn't do any more, they'll just, you know, find a storage locker and say, sit here.
Wow.
Stay warm.
Amid this, we've also got some really good performances from Yomiuri's Tomoyuki Sugano, who's just been excellent. In fact, he was going for 3 shutouts in a row the other night, and he had a blister, I believe, and they had to take him out because of that. And the aforementioned Hideaki Wakui of Chiba has been really stellar. He's had some really results-wise. I don't know about numbers-wise. He probably has, you know, his whip is kind of high, and he's got guys on base all the time, but he's not giving up a lot of runs, and that's really what it means.
He's located really well. He hasn't had he hasn't blown people away, but he's been able to execute his pitches when he's needed to. And with something that he can't do, he hasn't been able to do the last 5 years except when he's been coming out of the bullpen.
Yep. So speaking of bullpens, I don't want to get into it. It's probably a different topic for another show, but we really had a lot of blowups this weekend, and it got me to thinking. I started thinking, you know, there are no great closers out there. There's not even a really good closer out there. They're just guys who are put in the role. And, you know, you and I are probably forever going to have the argument about anybody can do it or it's not that big a deal. I'm not even sure what your philosophy is on it. I like a guy out there who's dominant and who strikes guys out. He's got the power arm. Let's go home. And we don't have those kind of guys. We don't have any Diamond Jeans out there. We don't have any, even Iwase, who wasn't a real power arm, but he had really good stuff, and he's not that way anymore.
Well, I don't care. I mean, you could have a knuckleballer out there, and it's fine with me, as long as he gets people out.
But we're not getting people out here. We're getting people on base, and we're getting people in, and we're getting runs on the board, and we're getting games blown. But, again, we can talk about it maybe next week and really delve into the topic. But I just see a problem out there. I just don't see any really good closers. And I think part of the reason is because we're taking the guys, I guess the main philosophy is if you have a guy with a really good arm, he should be a starter. And so now you're getting guys who don't have the really good arms, who don't have closer stuff, who are at the back of the bullpen saying, what do I throw now? And as we explained earlier, some of the guys are not locating and they're not executing pitches. So it's really... it's really making for some interesting games.
I'll give you that.
That's for sure.
And it's interesting because that's sort of a reverse course because, 30 years ago, let's say 50 years ago, basically, if you were in the bullpen, it's because you weren't any good.
Right.
And now it's, as I said last week when you were asking why I had changed my thoughts about relievers, and
that was
couple of weeks ago,
last month maybe.
Okay, recently when you asked how come I turned around to think relievers were suddenly valuable, and I'm not going to go into that perception. I'm exaggerating your point.
I got that. Thank you.
Okay. I was just heaping it on a little there.
Just an elbow and a smack to the chin, but I got it.
Yeah, basically. Basically, I missed a little bit. I'll try it harder next time. And but it was more a bit about how relievers, top relievers, have been used, you know, in more leverage situations as opposed to just prefabricated by the scoring rules, you know, save situations and such, which is much more efficient. So we've gone that way. The best relievers are used more now in tie games and, you know, even with losing by a run in the ninth inning because it's the last chance. On the other hand, I think maybe you're right. I think maybe we are going to the realization that there are limits on how valuable a reliever can be.
There are limits on
than two pitches. Yeah, there are limits on how valuable a reliever, a guy with good stuff, can be as a reliever. I mean, he can be more effective over fewer innings, but it might be more useful to have a guy who actually has a lot of good secondary pitches to have him start and go six, as opposed to pitching three innings a week.
Yeah. All right.
So well, that is interesting.
Yeah, we've got some issues out there. We should have another fun week. I want to make a seamless transition and talk about the Bay Stars again, and in particular, Alex Ramirez, Rami Khan, I like to call him now. And anytime we've had some really bad starts by some teams, we've gotten questions in the past from listeners, or we've made the statements ourselves that maybe this manager is not doing something A, B, or C or something. Mm-hmm. But here we are. We've got the Bay Stars who are already 8 games under .500. They're not having a good start. How much should we be looking at Alex Ramirez for some of these losses?
Well, he's a foreigner, so therefore it's all his fault. is that not the case? Is that not true anymore? I don't know if that's not true anymore, but somebody in the Bay Stars has to be thinking, at what point are we going to blame this all on him and move on? How much is their fault? It's interesting because, and I've probably mentioned this before, that they're not, oddly enough, they're really not doing anything offensively.
Nothing. They're awful.
They have been awful. And the good thing about Alex is he's going to be trying hard not to put unnecessary pressure on these guys, you know, who are underperforming, and knowing that some of underperforming is not. It's just bad, you know, some is bad luck. And he's also said lack of experience.
Yeah.
In that, you know, he says, you know, he's talked about certain situations. I expected that guy would hit that, you know, a fat pitch down the middle 3-0 when we had, you know, we were losing and we needed to bring home that runner from third base with one out. But so things like that. So he's had some frustrating moments, but he also believes in these guys' ability to get better, probably more than anybody in Japan.
Hmm. Well, after they lost on Tuesday, I think I tweeted that they were on pace for 100 losses.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen some stinky starts in the past by some teams, and I don't know if this is just a him thing or a team thing. And early on when he took the job, I think I wrote a blog post, and this might have been, I don't know, maybe right as camp was opening up or breaking sometime around then. And I said, well, you know, Ramirez might bring a new approach. He might bring some new thinking, but he's bringing back most of the same old pitchers. And that's a problem. And Shota Imanaga, the rookie,
mm-hmm.
some of the other guys have really pitched well. And like you just said, it's not really a pitching or defense problem. They've got 69 runs. Mm-hmm. That's the fewest in the Central League. And it's only two more runs than the Oryx Buffaloes. And anytime you're in the same sentence with the Oryx Buffaloes right now, it's not a good thing.
Mm.
So they're not scoring. They're not hitting. Oh. They're not producing. And it's, you know, we've seen Jose Lopez struggle. We've seen every other guy in the lineup struggle. And they keep putting in replacement players, and he's trying to mix and match and try to get favorable matchups. And, you know, the one thing that bothered me, when I think we could all point to, was the recent game this past week where I think it was Saturday night or Friday night. They're playing the Giants, and you've got the number 8 hitter coming up with first base open and the pitcher on deck. And even though I think actually Sugano was pitching that game, mm-hmm. and he had a good night at Jingu. I think it was right. his last start, where he had a couple hits and mm-hmm. knocked in some runs. So I can understand your hesitation, but it's the number 8 hitter, and he's the actual hitter, and you've got a pitcher on deck. And they decided not to walk Kobayashi, the catcher, Seiji Kobayashi.
I thought they had a good plan. I thought the execution was weak.
Well, that's the problem. You can have a bad execution pitch against the pitcher and they'll get it back, but maybe not against the number 8 hitter. So, you know, and they ended up losing that game.
Yeah. I think that also, you know,
they ended up tying in that game. They could have won it because they had a home run, a pinch hit home run in the ninth inning.
They could have won it in a couple of ways. Some bad base running in the ninth inning cost them as well. And they have been poor running the bases. We pick on Soichiro Tateoka a lot, but Kuramoto, the BayStars infielder, is probably the worst base runner in Japan right now. And that's a hefty
man. That's saying a lot. Yeah,
it is.
Because we've seen some poor running this year.
Right. Although he did, he's the one who had the big hit the next day. So the what I wanted to say about that at bat with Kobayashi was the previous at bat. It was funny because the previous at bat they fooled Kobayashi so badly with a changeup about three or four inches out of the zone, and he just looked terrible at it. He must have thought, well, if I get two strikes, they're going to throw me another outside changeup. And the problem was they did, which wasn't a problem. What they threw was a changeup that just hung there.
Yeah, it was and flat, it was up high. Yeah.
And it was over the plate. It was over the edge of the plate and was just sitting there waiting for him to tee off and try to hit it into the seats. He didn't succeed, but not by, you know, he didn't miss that one by much.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just thinking it's these little things that come up in the game, and I don't think that Alex is actually making every decision on, you know, for example, where to play the infield. Where and when to position the outfielders and when to bunt and when to hit and run and when to take the pitchers out and all this stuff. I don't think he's making every single little decision. But in the end, you know, these are his decisions to make.
Mm-hmm.
And he either okays it or he doesn't. And at some point, we've got to point to him and say, hey, look, if you're getting a lot of advice from your other coaches, stop. Because it's only, you know, they're not going to get fired. You know, not that I think that he's on the hot seat per se, but it's not their necks that are on the line. It's his. And start making your decisions. And if those are your decisions and you're living with them and it's fine, then there's nothing you can do. And if he's making these decisions and they're not working out, maybe he should listen to. I don't know what the problem is, but there's definitely something that, and again, I don't think he has great players at every position. I think he's using replacements in a lot of situations where he's just trying to get favorable matchups, as I mentioned before. But obviously things are not working, and they've got it. We did talk about the fact that their lineup's not complete last week, but that's, you know, that could be the case. Somebody could get hurt tomorrow. You know, you still got to figure out a way to win, and you got to do it by scoring runs, and they're not scoring even close to enough runs.
Yeah, they're playing. I mean, as I said, they have positives. The pitching plan, basically, I see their pitching plan has more or less worked. You know, now they got to go. You know, the plan A was figure out the pitching and catching, and I think they, you know, they get a passing grade on that. I think they get a good grade on that. And then, of course, when you do that, you have to have a defense behind it, and I think they've put a fairly good defense. And now they're going. Now we need these guys we have out there for their gloves to hit. And that part hasn't quite come around, although this is what he's really good at. And I expect this team to either, you know, they're either going to turn around or they're going to crash through the floor of through the ocean surface and plummet into the depths at the speed of light. they're gonna get a little altitude, and either they're gonna achieve escape velocity, or it's gonna be, you know, vaporization.
I love the picture you paint there, but I don't know how bleak it is. They're like I said, my magic number for being under 500, especially early on, is 10, and they're at 8, and I don't like that at all. And what's bothering me more is that they can't score anything off of anyone, whether it's the top pitcher or the number six guy in the rotation. That's what's bothering me.
And again, it's not like they're starved of chances. So I think they are. I see positives, and I don't see them crashing. But what I see when I say they're crashing is that they're not playing as well as they should be, and either they're going to or they're going to fail spectacularly.
Yep.
They're gonna pick it up and play a lot better, get better results than they are now, or they're gonna lose confidence and just look like the 2005 Rockton Eagles.
Yep. Okay. Making another transition, I want to talk about Takahiro Arai, the Hiroshima Carp infielder, who is one hit now away after he got two hits on Sunday. He's one hit away from 2000. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy I really like. I've always really liked him, especially the first time I spoke to him. Just really down-to-earth guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's 39, but it seems like he has been reborn with the Carp since his return back here. I really thought he was out. I thought he was on the edge of his baseball career, and that it was over. And it looks like he's developed a different swing. He's playing with a lot of life. He's even playing defense. I saw somebody tweet.
You see the play he made on Gomez?
Yeah, the play he made, dive into the.
Towards he's the, always had that. He's always had that. But and yeah,
we both laughed last year when manager Koichi Yo got to turn to him in desperation, basically, and started putting him out there. And he's been steady ever since. I mean, the production has really been more than anybody I think could have imagined, and he's really helping.
He is indeed. And, you know, I think this process started six or seven. He moved to – hold on.
It was 2008 he went to Hanshin.
And he was this big, not exactly fun-loving, still a serious guy, but friendly and open. And when he went to the Tigers, he became – Mr. I'm all serious. I have to act like I'm a star. Kind of put on this. I need to be a star face.
Isn't that a Tiger thing? I mean, it seems like it all the guys. Yeah, you try to talk to any other guys and they're like that.
It gets that way. Yeah, I think that's sort of the you know, it's the Tiger mask, you know, to use the wrestling analogy. You know, you've got to put on a little face that shows you're serious, and you know you got to be there in Tiger time, which is 15 minutes ahead of whatever time you just said, and all these little weird things go on with the Tigers. But you know, I think his last year with Hanshin, and I think he knew it was his last year, and he really lightened up 2 years ago. I felt like you know, I said, you know, you look like you lost some weight. And he going, oh, you think so? I said, I feel I'm fat. So really, thanks a lot. And, you know, and 3 years ago, he'd look at me like, huh, what do you mean? And now he's back to being, you know, the friendly guy I've known for the last 10 years.
Yeah. So I think this is quite an accomplishment for him. Like I said, from 2008 to 2014, he played with the Tigers, and he got 800, by my count, he got 867 hits as a Tiger. And it doesn't seem like he had that many, because I can only remember a couple. Yeah, I can only remember a couple. Yeah, it just seemed like his career just went in the toilet when he went to Hanshin. And then as soon as, now that he's gone, it's back where it was. You know, it's like he picked up and never left the Hiroshima Carp.
The other thing, which, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt you here, is that he's, you know, he's approaching 2,000 hits the way Kazuhiro Wada did. Now, I hope he doesn't exit the way Kazuhiro Wada did, which was, I got that 2,000, thanks a lot, see you later. But he's doing it like Kazuhiro Wada, like he doesn't know he's going to get to 2,000. It's like, you know, he thinks he's several hundred away, and then he might get it if he keeps burning up the, you know, burning up the plate.
Yeah, he's hitting like a wild man.
I know, he's just going like this is another day at the office, and I love it. Good for him.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just wondering, as I always ask when these guys hit this milestone in particular, what do you think about him and the Hall of Fame, especially in terms of his worthiness as a guy who's played 17 seasons? Because I think he hasn't played. I mean, Wada was a compiler. Tanishige was a compiler. And this is a guy who also came out of college, Komazawa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he's been around a long time.
Well, Tanishige was more than that because he was a catcher too. You know, if Tanishige was, you know, a 2,000 hit guy as a first baseman, you know, and had something like his career, and I would think no. But when you have the record of success he had, he gets a lot of credit for that. So I wouldn't really put those three guys in the same category.
Right, I know they're different. I was just saying that they compiled.
They were always the. Although Wada was a deserved MVP, and none of the other guys really were.
True.
And also at a primes, Wada had about 7 years in a row, which where he was one of the three or four best players in the Pacific League. And I think Wada is a borderline Hall of Famer because he had the power, and he just had a very late start to his career. I don't want to hold him back for that. Tanishige also because he was a catcher and he became like the best defensive catcher in the game for about 5 or 6 years, and having spent a lot of that time, you know, in Atsuya Furuta's shadow was quite an accomplishment. But Arai as a first baseman, although, you know, he's a great fielding first baseman, but nobody gets into the Hall of Fame for having a good glove at first base.
Right.
No. He didn't have, you know, he was a good average hitter. He didn't hit home runs in a park that was very susceptible to hit home runs.
Yeah, his high in his career was 43 in 2005 with Hiroshima.
43 is a lot. Is a great number in any park.
Yeah, it's a lot, but he never had 30, though.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah.
Okay, so as a Hall of Famer, no. I would put those in, if I had to rank them offhand, I would go Tanishige, yes. Wada, maybe. Arai, no.
Yeah, I think, you know, he only got a shot to play last year because, again, Ogata was desperate and needed somebody and needed to figure out how to score runs, and he threw in Arai. And it worked, and he got to play, and he's going to get his 2,000 hits. But had the other guys been successful, he'd just be a pinch hitter like Tomonori Maeda.
Tomonori Maeda.
He just would have been a pinch hitter like him. So I don't think he's Hall worthy either, even though he's a great guy, and I really like him.
Yeah, even, you know, 2,000 hits is not 3,000 in the majors,
which
is a little higher plateau. It's a little harder to reach.
Right.
And especially now with the, you know, 2,000 hits used to be a huge plateau because they used to play 130-game seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But now when they're playing, you know, 10% more games every year, and they've played many years with a very lively ball, when most of these 2,000 is sort of like, you know, it's just like buying a ticket to Disneyland. Wow, it's a great ticket. Where'd you get yours? Oh, good price. I got my 2,000 hits somewhere else, and I got a bargain basement. I'm being mean, but I'm just saying, I just mean that there's inflation.
Yep. Yeah, gotcha. So. All right, a couple notes. Yuki Yanagita of the SoftBank Hawks had his walk streak to to start the season, stretched to 18 games when he drew a walk on, I think it was Wednesday night or Tuesday night. No, it was Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And he got a walk in his last at-bat. It was off of Lotte lefty Takahiro Matsunaga. And it tied Sadaharu O's 1970 record of 18 consecutive games to start the season. And it was awesome because it was his last at-bat. It was a really, really patient walk. And it came with the bases loaded, forced in what eventually was the winning run. Awesome. Awesome. I thought that was quite an accomplishment, especially in that situation where you really want to hit. Mm. And he took his hacks. I think he fouled off a couple pitches. I didn't see the entire at-bat. But a real quality at-bat when you really want to hit the ball. And he gutted it out, worked a walk, got that run home. Mm. The streak was broken. It was broken the next day, Wednesday, against Lotte. But this is no small feat, I don't think.
Wow, getting
walks isn't that easy, you know. And I know you watch Barry Bonds a lot, and I don't think he was getting Barry Bonds treatment. I don't think they were just not throwing him pitches to hit.
No.
I think they were throwing him pitches to hit and mixing them in with pitches out of the zone, trying to get him to chase. And he just was patient. And I
he's developed that over the years. This isn't a sudden sort of Yoshihiro Maru. Oh, you mean if I get four balls, I could go to first base? Well, how come they never told me this?
I thought it was 10.
I know. Maru went from a guy who drew 45 walks a year to a guy who draws 90 walks a year in 1 year. It was like when I wanted to be there when that light went turned on.
So anyway, he didn't get the record, which is unfortunate, but he did tie a record, so that was awesome. Another note, Hideki Kuriyama of the Nippon Ham Fighters got his 300th win. Mm-hmm. He's in his fifth year with the Fighters, mm-hmm. and he's the sixth Nippon Ham skipper to win at least that many in franchise history. I thought that was pretty good for him.
Yeah, my favorite line about Kuriyama was after he won the Japan Series, he won the Pacific League and went to the Japan Series in 2012. His former manager, who managed him for about 2 years with the Yakult Swallows, Katsuya Nomura, said, "Obviously, the quality of Japanese baseball is in serious decline if a lunkhead like Kuriyama can lead his team to the Japan Series."
Boom.
Hashtag
high heat. If I manage him, I know he's got nothing upstairs. Yeah, this is, you know, a little. Yeah, a typical. I think what that means is that Nomura actually likes him, because if he doesn't like you, he's not going to waste time talking about you.
Feeling the love.
Exactly. A little of that Ainomuchi, the whip of love.
Ouch.
We're not delving into S&M or anything. This is what they call it.
Okay. Yeah. Don't let that hit me again. All right. Let's go to fielding questions. The question this week comes from Ray Villa on Twitter, and he says, "Do you think Tetsuto Yamada will make the jump to the bigs? And what kind of impact will he have?"
Well, since, you know, I have numerous opinions about him, why don't you go first?
Oh, you want me to go first? Well, allow me to correct the question. It shouldn't be do you think. It should be when. When do you think Tetsuto Yamada will make the jump to the bigs? And I think this is an interesting aspect because of what we've seen and what we've heard and what I've mentioned before about guys having, you know, the teams wanting to dangle the carrot in front of these players and make them perform at the highest before they allow them to go to the major leagues. And in my opinion, if Tetsuto Yamada plays at this level again next year, what he's doing, if he keeps up, first of all, he's got to keep up what he's doing this year. Mm-hmm. And then that'll be 2 years consecutive, and he does it again and they win, mm-hmm. I think he'll be ready to go. I don't know that the team will allow him to go. So that's after 2017, in time for the 2018 season. I don't think he can go that quickly. So I would guess maybe the Olympic year, 2020, but maybe 2019. That might be when. What do I expect from him? The way he's hitting is one thing, but he's really starting to play some quality defense at second base. He's making some gold glove plays, and not just with the glove, not with his range by just getting the balls, but he's throwing from the right in the middle of the field from second base, from behind second base sometimes. His speed is going to play really well in the United States. He makes heady plays. His all-around game is just starting to come together. So I would liken him to what Kazuo Matsui maybe did in the States, or Akinori Iwamura did in the States, and some maybe a hybrid of those two, a guy who maybe can hit for a little bit of power on occasion. But, you know, that all depends on where he goes. If he ends up going to a place like the L.A. Dodgers and he forms a double play combo with Corey Seager, there's different expectations there and different things he can do in that park. But let's say he goes to Colorado and he forms a double play combo with Trevor Story, and he's in a ballpark where the ball flies, I think it's a completely different, you know, dynamic, and all the variables are different, and I think the expectations change. But I would expect it to be somewhere between Iwamura and Matsui's style or that type of play. Jim?
Okay, as to when he'll go, I agree with you. Basically, they're gonna try to lead him on as long as they can. But once the Swallows win, when the Swallows win another pennant, which I don't know they will, but if they do win another pennant in the next, we'll say in the next 3 years, he's gone.
Okay.
Basically, because as long as he maintains more or less, he doesn't have to maintain the level he had last year. I was astonished that he took the big, you know, he made the big jump up in 2014. That was a huge breakthrough season. He didn't have an MVP caliber season because he didn't start the season at second base.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he had one of those years where had he played the first 2 months of the season as the regular, he would have been the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was still learning along the way. He was just getting better and better. So he took a huge jump up last year. Right now I see him more or less staying where he was last year. Okay, the other thing is, as John mentioned, the park affects him. He's an all-star. He's probably the best player in the Central League when he plays away from Jingu, and he's on another planet when he plays at Jingu. It's incredible. So he's plenty good. He has one thing which is going to translate, and if he goes to the majors, I think in the next 2 years, he's going to make people in the majors forget that there were ever Japanese infielders who didn't meet expectations. Because this guy has two things which really translate. One, he has a quick bat, meaning he can start his swing very late. And despite that, I mean, a lot of people have quick bats. Ichiro Suzuki has a very quick bat. Norichika Oki has a quick bat. But they don't have fast bats. And in other words, the bat doesn't go through the strike zone really, really quickly with those guys. It doesn't go through at a high rate of speed. But Yamada generates a lot of bat speed, can hold back and still generate a lot of bat speed, which is pretty rare. I don't think anybody's as good a hitter as him in Japan. I don't think Yanagita's as good a hitter as he is.
Mm-hmm.
I think but he needs to see better pitching than he's going to see in Japan right now. I don't see the level as really challenging him very much. And he's in an age when he could be challenged and grow more. So, yeah, a lot's going to depend on when he goes. If he goes, for example, at the end of the 2018 season or even at the end of the 2017 season, I see him as being an all-star. I see him as being basically a major league all-star.
Mm.
The farther you get along in that path, the closer you get to being Tadahito Iguchi, who's a good player. But on the other side, he's a very athletic and he's become a good fielder. And so that'll help him avoid some of the injuries. The other thing is that he's also – the other thing that he'll have in his favor is, unlike his predecessors, he won't be competing against guys who are using performance-enhancing drugs.
Mm.
And he won't be having to deal with Major League's fuzzy idea of what's interference at second base. The old school, you know, tackle the guy. If you can see second base, you're close enough.
Like Leg Crusher Utley.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, I think all those things are working in his favor. But again, the posting system, the Swallows have used the posting system, and I think that if the Swallows were to post him this year, I think they could get close to $20 million for him.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So I think that's the thing that he has that most position players don't. He's got what Yoshio Itoi did not have, which is cash value. So he has a good chance to be posted early because of the return value for the Swallows.
Okay. All right, Ray, thank you very much. And I hope that I'm sure that was a very thorough answer on Jim's part. And I hope that.
I'm sure it was.
I think it was. All right. So anyone else who has a question, send it to ykyujohn@gmail.com or send us a high heat question via Twitter at JBW Podcast. You can also go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Thanks a lot. And we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.